Welcome to another edition of 100% Canucks. Landon Ferraro and John Shannon. So, Landon, to me, the simple way to describe what happened this week was the Jekyll and Hyde of Vancouver hockey. An impressive road trip. Not many people gave them opportunities to win two of the three games. They did that. Brock Besser's theatrics in Nashville will go down for many people as one of the most exciting plays they've seen in a while. And then they come home. And there is an expectation against a team that they, a lot of people think they're better than. They can't beat the Chicago Blackhawks. What do you think's going through the mind of people around the Canuck organization?
Well, I think, you know, like last game against Chicago showed a lot of what the Canucks have been so far this season. They had two really good periods and then kind of fell apart in the third. And that's been a lot of the games. They have really good pieces of the game and then not so good. And it's just trying to outweigh one over the other. You know, it's one of the reasons they've, in the last six games, they've gone loss, win, kind of just rotating through. You know, I would say that their first two periods against Chicago were actually really good. They were getting pucks to the net. They were getting bodies inside. You know, they finished the game with, you know, 45 plus shots and you ran into a hot goalie. But I do think that when the third period started and they didn't have the lead where they felt like they should have, guys tried to start doing more than they needed to. And that started opening up lanes. Like you look at the first two Bertuzzi goals, they're identical plays essentially. And it's from someone leaving the front of the net to go to the half wall for a guy coming down that side. Well, you didn't need to do that. Or at minimum, you have to wait for your other D and centerman to get back to the net front before you leave. You can't just leave someone wide open on the back door. And so it's tough. You have guys that are trying so hard to win that you end up making it worse on yourself. And a big, you know, one of the things this year has been getting shots to the net, getting guys to the inside ice and all that. Well, they did it really well for two periods and they weren't really rewarded. So to stay on that and be disciplined enough to continue on and just stick with the plan, it's really hard. Like guys feel the pressure for sure. They want to be in a better position than where they're sitting right now. And it hasn't gone that way.
Today's guest is somebody you're very familiar with, Brett McLean. What has he meant to this organization in this short period of time?
I think he's been a really big piece for the new coaching staff. He's, you know, I had him his first 2 years as a coach in Iowa as an assistant. And as much as he was learning on the go of what coaching was, because it was really his first job, his energetic, intense, but like fun nature was awesome for us players to be around. He is someone that really loves to dive deep into the game. And he's one of those coaches that, you know, you finish practice and you're like, hey, Brett, can I grab you for 5 minutes to work on something? You never had to wonder, you know, is he going to say yes? It was always like a big smile, like, yeah, let's get to work. Right. Like it's that, it was the same thing of when he played, like he was a hardworking blue collar type guy. And he brings the same for the Canucks and you can see it behind the benches. Obviously Adam Foote's running everything, but Mac is always in someone's ear or has the board out, making sure guys know what's going on. Like, I think he's a really, you know, important piece for this coaching staff.
Well, he's a BC boy, born and raised in Comox on the island, played his junior hockey for the Kelowna Rockets. Actually, he was in Tacoma before they moved to Kelowna, which I think, Scott, that to me is cool, playing in the Tacoma Dome, which was the worst hockey.
Every time I hear Tacoma Dome, it reminds me in the summers I'd be at Christina Lake and we'd get some of the U.S. stations. And it was always monster trucks coming the Tacoma Dome.
Well, one of the worst venues for hockey in the history of mankind because the seats were so flat and then there was a giant gap between where the fans sat and the boards. But eventually Tacoma and the Hamilton family moved them to Kelowna, and they have been a huge success story in the Western Hockey League. And it's almost like a badge of honor to be a graduate of the Kelowna Rockets alumni.
Yep.
When you think of someone, and Brett McLean's one of them. And we will talk to Brett McLean, assistant coach for the Vancouver Canucks, Landon and me, on 100% Canucks after this.
I won't keep you long. Darren Millard with a tip for everyone who loves great hockey podcasts like this one. John Shannon and I host the OG of 100% Hockey, coming your way multiple times a week. The guest list is the best you will find. Multiple shows a week ensures you won't miss out on any news, and we dig even deeper into the biggest stories around the NHL. Most of our guests are also friends, so I promise there'll be more conversation beyond the X's and the O's. John really does get bored with that after a while. So join us for 100% Hockey. The name says it all. Subscribe now while you enjoy thinking about it. And enjoy.
Welcome back to 100% Canucks. Landon Ferraro, John Shannon, joined by assistant coach Brett McLean. Brett, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good to see you guys.
Okay, so here's the hard-hitting question first.
Yeah.
That road trip was really impressive. You know, the way you undermanned, won two games was remarkable, really. I actually, on another show, I call it miraculous. But then you come home and it is far from your team's best performance. As a coach, what do you walk out of the building on Wednesday night saying, holy smokes, where did that come from?
Yeah, that's always why we're scratching our heads, games like that for sure. And made it even more puzzling was, you know, really the first two periods we were very good. And completely outchanced them and outshot them, and probably should have had three goals, had a nice lead going into the third. And then obviously they got the one goal and things unraveled from there. But you hear the old adage, the first game back after a road trip, but you know, it's, you can't buy into that. It's that's a game that we really wanted. And obviously losing the momentum off that solid road trip was disappointing.
Well, and you actually took my second question is, like, do we make too many excuses about coming off road trips?
I think there's something to that. Yeah. Because it is one of those things though. You do feel a bit different even as a coach, just physically there's just something about it. But I mean, the guys are playing so many games that it's something that we have to get over and make sure that doesn't become a trend.
In that last game against Chicago, you know, I agree with you. Like, the first two periods were very good. And I mean, your shot totals were up, you're getting chances. And then there's just a few big defensive breakdowns that lead to some goals against. Like, how much do you put to fatigue or guys trying to do too much, trying to win, like trying to do the right thing, but putting themselves in trouble because of it?
Yeah, there's certainly something to that. And you do see that probably more now. It's possible to see that with our group because guys are playing more minutes than they're used to, more minutes than they would normally if we were closer to healthy. And because of that, they try to do too much sometimes, and it's coming from a good place and you appreciate it. But obviously that third period, I think there was some fatigue in that, but again, something that we need to manage because there's going to be plenty more games like that with this schedule this season. It'll be something that we looked at those breakdowns too, and they were, you nailed it, that it was just some big miscues and ended up in the back of our net, and obviously need to cut down on those in third period games.
And then you brought up the condensed schedule, and how much more important is it because you don't have a ton of practice time? Like, you had a couple days here, but there really hasn't been much time. Like, how much more important are meetings and the one-on-one chats with guys trying to correct things on the go?
Yeah, I mean, when for coaches, you don't got to ask us to have more meetings. So for us, it's second nature for us. But yeah, and there's a balance to it too. But no, they're huge. You're totally right in that we need to just lock down what we want to do and how we want to play in that video, because there just isn't time to get on the ice. Even one thing we've done this year, and we did it today in practice, is walkthrough type stuff. One thing we did today was ozone routes. Scoring goals was an issue there last game, especially in the first two periods. So we just did some walkthroughs where it's not overly taxing for the guys, but they're still getting some reps in. So that's another area that we've looked at, and we've done that a few times this year when we do get those practices. And you also mentioned the one-on-one meetings. Those are just huge to make sure that the guys aren't getting bogged down with too many team meetings, but they're still getting kind of the teaching that they need.
How much video do you use?
Quite a bit. We're obviously breaking it down after each game, and then in each kind of area, both 5-on-5, penalty kill, and power play, we'll probably watch roughly 10-minute meeting of video between each game that we'll present to the players, about 10 minutes long, maybe 12 minutes, and then we'll do the same for the opposition's pre-scout and how they want to play. So there's a good amount of it, but we try to keep a real healthy balance. It's not too much, because we do understand we're playing so much, and for the players, they're athletes. They want to get out there and play. So too much video can not be beneficial too.
Part of what we do on 100% Canucks is get to know people. This is your first season within the organization. What was summer like before and after you got the job?
Yeah, well, it was very busy, especially after the job, moving, and we were living in Minnesota still. I was coaching in Iowa, but my family had stayed in Minnesota after my time there with the Wild. So I was moving from there back to BC, and then so that was very, very busy moving across half the continent, and then our daughter actually stayed down there to go to the University of Minnesota. So then we had to go back down to move her in. So there was lots going on, and then on top of that, getting to know a new coaching staff, and watching how the Canucks played and how Adam wanted our team to play. So also getting up to speed on a new job. So there was lots going on.
When you talk about up to speed, you were in the Wild organization for 8 seasons. You were there for a while. Is there an adjustment period to a new organization? And, quite frankly, do the Canucks do things different than the Wild?
Well, yeah, there definitely is. And just little tweaks, little differences within the organization that are just done differently, different people handling different responsibilities. So there's definitely unique areas to each one, and it takes some time to get used to those, but it's also exciting when you go to a new organization, and it brings a whole bunch of energy because you're learning new things, meeting new people, seeing different ways to do things, and then obviously no two coaches want their teams to play the exact same. They're always similar. There's only so many systems out there, but learning Adam's system and the way he really wanted to play. And obviously we had those conversations in the interview process as well. But there's always tweaks and little nuances that are different.
I was with you in Iowa your first 2 years coaching. And, right from the beginning, all us guys could see the excitement that you brought to the dressing room and your dedication to it. Did you know that you wanted to get into coaching when you were still playing?
Yeah, well, thanks for that, Landon. And it was a pleasure coaching you. That was
now stop it. You guys get a room. Come on, what's going on here? Come on.
It was a pleasure coaching me because I wasn't in the lineup much. Yeah. I was just sitting in the trainer's room the entire 2 seasons.
We had great chats just like this. it was good. But no, actually, I didn't think I wanted to get into coaching when I was playing. Main reason being, you move your family so much when you're playing. I didn't want to do that to them after. And here we are. Obviously I'm guilty as charged of doing just that, continuing to move my family. So I'm very lucky that they're willing to continue on this crazy hockey odyssey. But just when I was done playing, I didn't really know what I want to do. The plan was to move back to BC and to just kind of go from there. And then after about 6 weeks, I was bouncing off the walls with nothing to do. So my wife looked at me and said, you got to get yourself a job. So I reached out to a few people in hockey. And then just as when I was offered the interview for the Iowa job, that just really lit a fire in me that I wanted to be a coach. And this is what I wanted to do and to help players realize their dreams. So to play pro hockey. So it was something that then came very, very natural.
And then, well, speaking of natural, like what parts came natural to you and what parts did you have to really kind of put the work in to get more comfortable at?
Yeah, I think because I came straight from playing to coaching, I think relating to players came very natural because obviously I'd just been in the players' gates. So that was natural. I think the presenting and public speaking was the one thing that is just different. And so actually my first off season after coaching, I went and practiced and went to Toastmasters just to learn how to public speak I thought of it kind of along the ways of, as a player, you're always working on your shot or your skating or whatever it may be. Those are your tools. And as a coach, one of your big tools is public speaking. So I needed to work on that just like I would have worked on something as a player. So that was something that didn't come natural, but again, worked on it and now kind of have those tools to use in my daily presentations.
Well, I was wondering how you took such a big jump from the first year to the second year's lead in meetings in Iowa there. Yeah. Makes more sense now.
Yeah, there you go.
So how would you describe your coaching style, even as an assistant on this bench? Are you a chatterbox? What are you?
No, I wouldn't say I'm a chatterbox. I think one thing I do kind of focus on is details of the game. And so I think that's I take pride in the details of the game, but also I'm a big believer in the players need to have freedom on the ice. So make sure they're organized, make sure they know their roles and their jobs and their routes, kind of, as I mentioned earlier, in all different areas. But then, you know, these players are the best in the world. So you got to give them the freedom to use their instincts. So I would say that kind of detailed, but give the players their freedom to kind of learn and grow and play on their own.
After being a head coach for 2 years in the American League, what adjustments have you had to make to becoming an assistant coach?
Well, I think kind of my last answer too, it's sometimes as the head coach, you're kind of always addressing everything, or not everything, but most things. When you see something, you're addressing it and that you feel is necessary with the group or with the individual. As an assistant, that's not always the case. You're more just making little tweaks and trying to make sure the ship is going in the right direction. And you're suggesting things to the head coach so that he can kind of make those big decisions. And so that's something that it just sometimes gotta just wait and bring up a point later on rather than maybe saying it right off the bat.
You know, we always talk about teams creating chemistry, the players with new players. Is a chemistry a discussion amongst coaches as well?
Yeah, it's a huge thing, no question. And I think one good way to put it is just that, you know, we're always asking the players to play for the team and to play for the crest and to sacrifice. And as coaches, we have to do the same. And the players can sense that too. So a coaching staff needs to work together well and needs to be unselfish for each other and do those same things that we're asking the players to do. So it's a huge deal.
When you get with a new coaching staff, is it you talking about, obviously you're defining roles, but you mentioned there in the last answer of, you know, maybe sometimes you need to go talk to someone. Sometimes you need to hold on to it for the next part. Like, is it a feeling out process when you're working with a new head coach of, you know, I want to be able to do and help as much as I can, but I don't want to be stepping on toes. Like, you know what I mean? Like, how do you figure out who does what in that sense?
Yeah, there's definitely a feeling all process. And so for us, we got together twice this summer as a coaching staff and watched a ton of video and went for dinners, and just kind of throughout that, you kind of want to learn how we're going to play and Adam wants to play and what's important to him as far as our team. And then you also figure out, to your point, who's kind of enthusiastic in different areas on the coaching staff, and then kind of the roles kind of develop from there. And so that's kind of how we did it. And yeah, there's very specific roles defined, but you have to collaborate on everything. And, you know, the more voices in that coach's office that are working together really helps. Then obviously when you come out of the office, it's just one voice. And it's always a consistent message, but yeah, it takes some time to kind of figure that out. And it kind of took us through training camp. And now we've kind of found our stride, and everybody kind of, I think, feels comfortable in their roles.
How would you define your role then?
I'd say, again, back to kind of the details, I love running practices. So I have a large role in we all do, obviously, but a large role in kind of designing and running the practices as well as kind of system stuff. So I've definitely got one of the voices in that area. So that would be kind of my role on the staff, is kind of, again, making sure that those details, the kind of day-to-day operations, I would say is would be a big part of my role.
Curious, growing up on the island, you were a Canucks fan?
Of course, yeah.
And your favorite player was?
Trevor Linden.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So, and in your time in and around the game, did you ever spend time with Trevor? Did you ever get to meet Trevor? How does it work when you're, yeah, you know, when you're playing your junior hockey in Kelowna and doing what you do?
Yeah, I didn't get to meet him when I was younger, but I actually have met him a few times throughout the years, golf tournaments, just really briefly. And then actually this past summer, I went, I know Luke Shen pretty well. And actually one of my boys was over at his house playing with some other friends and swimming in the pool. And I went to pick him up at Luke Shen's house, and Luke said to me, "Hey, meet my friend Trevor, who's here." And his friend Trevor turned around; it was Trevor Linden. And so I was like, you know what, Luke, you could maybe introduce him as not just your friend Trevor, but that was pretty cool to get. And then we chatted for a good hour, and that was really fun. So that was a good time to meet him. And I got to tell my son, I said, "Geez, this is my favorite player growing up." So that was pretty cool for me.
That's awesome. You know, you said you like running practices, and you know, I've noticed this year at morning skates, you guys have, and I assume it's because you don't have as much practice time, but you've started doing some more D zone stuff or getting extra touches on the power play. How hard is it as a coaching staff when you're scheduling out the month to figure out where you can actually work on different pieces of the team game?
Yeah, it's a big challenge this season, and you're right. In the morning skates, we have to use that time, and it is challenging because the biggest thing you want the players to have is energy for the game. So you don't want to do too much in the morning, but you want to make sure they get their touches and we're doing things so that they're ready to go for at night. And the D zone stuff we do is quite a bit. It's usually a little more walkthroughish, but it's always geared toward what the opposition does. So that's why that's been in there quite a bit. And we feel we really like that. But yeah, it's just when we're looking at the month, I think we had one stretch there a few weeks back where we had one practice in 16 days. Like, that was it. So it's just really trying to find time whenever we can. And again, it goes back to those walkthroughs that aren't overly taxing, but the players can kind of still get their reps.
I'm wondering, as a coach now and as a head coach in the American League, you played for a lot of teams. You played for a lot of coaches. Are there voices when you speak are there voices of other coaches that you hear in your own voice now?
No question.
Yeah. And who's at the top of that list?
Yeah. Probably a few at the top of the list would be Todd McClellan. He'd be up there. I played for him for 2 years in the minors in Cleveland and in Houston. Dean Evason would be another voice that's in there quite a bit. I coached under him for 3 years in Minnesota. So those would be a couple that would be right up there. Another one would be, especially as an assistant, I really try to pattern myself after Tony Granato. So, got a chance to spend some time with him the other night. So he's a real mentor of mine, and I talked to him quite a bit. So those would be three voices that definitely, and three coaches that I've really got a chance to work with and definitely use quite a bit of their stuff.
Is there something, like, if you had a moment in your coaching career now, especially when you're a head coach in Iowa, that, as you said, this is what we're doing, you almost kind of chuckle to yourself because it's exactly what you said as a player. You're like, if I was in charge, I would not be doing this.
Yeah.
Have you had any of those moments? Yeah, I've always wondered that.
More than one. Yeah. More than one. And it's, the thing I found too, is as the head coach is, there's some days when you're a player, right? You're like, geez, that coach is in a bad mood. Like, what's going on with him? And it just, as a head guy, you've got a lot on your plate, and it's great, but there are days when, exactly to your point, I would come away from the rink and be like, man, the players must have thought I was just in the worst mood today. just a total prick. But it's just kind of, it's not intentional. You just but sometimes you do have to be that way, or you feel like you have to be that way to kind of really motivate and kind of get things going in the right direction. But yeah, there's certainly times where I was like, man, I didn't think I'd be like this, but sometimes it just goes that way.
How has your style changed since you started coaching?
I think it's just changed probably in the confidence level. I think when you're a new coach, you're making sure that you're worried that you want to make sure that the players appreciate your insights and appreciate your thoughts, but you're not sure of them because you haven't really tested them that much. Right. And now they've kind of been tested and you feel much more confident in what works and what might not work. And again, that goes back to the coaching staff though. When the coaching staff works well together and collaborates, then when we're speaking to a player, speaking to the team, it's not just coming from you, it's coming from the entire coaching staff. And I think that really builds confidence for a coach as well.
By the way, do you coaches get into competitions? Like, is there a pickleball tournament on the road, or do you guys ever do anything like that?
We haven't with our staff, but we definitely, there's plenty of that. We actually have some coaches ratings actually that we do from time to time based on practices. So we'll rate each other. So we have some fun with that.
When you have as many injuries as you guys have had this year, it's a whole new coaching staff coming in. You're trying to get the team playing your way, and then you have half the lineup out, essentially. How hard is it to keep the message going one way, knowing that you'll be getting players back, but the way it's designed, the guys aren't there?
Yeah, that's certainly been a huge challenge. And really for us, and we've been so fortunate that the guys that have come up and come in have done very, very well. And so obviously Abbotsford having the season they had last year has been huge for us and has kept us really, really afloat to this point. But there's no question that it's a little bit, you're never treading water in the NHL. That's never the case. But, we really are just, we can keep putting points in the bank and getting some wins here. And we really feel like we can get the way we want to play established with the group as it is right now, with so many guys hurt, that we can really start to roll when we do get healthy.
Okay. I got to ask you, Dean Evason's coming to town tomorrow. We're taping this on Friday. He's in town tomorrow. So does that mean money on the board or what?
Yeah. Well, I put money on the board in Minnesota. It didn't go too well, but there'll be, I don't know. I already had a chance to say hi to Dean and that'll be a big one for me to try to make sure that we can get the best of him.
By my calculation, you played in for 14 different professional organizations in your career. Yeah. Please tell me, Brett, you have a sweater for all 14 locked up somewhere.
I do. I do. Yeah. I
do. Wow. That is, now that's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, yeah, I take pride in my journeyman career. That's what I say. It's, I take pride in that. And no, it's, I've got some cool ones out there. It was, yeah, played in all sorts of different places in all sorts of countries.
Yeah, no, I looked at that. The first thing I thought of, man, would that be great down in the you know, in the man cave? That would be fantastic.
Absolutely. I got some good ones.
Last question to you, Landon.
Oh, I'd start off by John started off by asking, what was the summer like, you know, before and after you got this job? You're a BC guy. How quick after it was announced that you got the assistant job here in Vancouver that aunts and uncles and old friends started reaching out, trying to find that ticket connect? Did you have to change your number? Did you have to start kind of making a list? How did that work?
No, the phone definitely blew up. My wife's too blew up. The phones blew up. No question. So, no, we had to be, pretty clear with that we're happy to help all the tickets, but we only get so many. And, but no, it's been very special to be back here and to work for the Canucks.
Well, I tell you what, Bruce Hamilton's a good old friend of mine, so I know he's thrilled to see you back in the NHL and particularly happy that you're back in British Columbia and working for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah. Awesome. No, Bruce has been great to me over the years, his entire family. So I owe a lot to Bruce. So very thankful.
Great. For him. Thank you for this, Brett.
Thanks, guys. That was fun.
Brett McLean, assistant coach of the Vancouver Canucks, on 100% Canucks.
Shoot, score, win, repeat, on the ice and online. Keep the energy going with NHL Game Zone, the ultimate hockey hub for free-to-play games, prizes, and nonstop competition. Take your best shot with games like NHL Lines, Bingo, Bracket Challenge, and more. Challenge yourself and battle your friends and hockey fans worldwide. Play games for chances to win awesome NHL prizes. NHL Game Zone, your one stop for hockey free-to-play gaming. Play today at nhl.com/gamezone. Terms and conditions apply.
So you talked about his enthusiasm and his love of the game, Landon. I could certainly feel that in the last 25 minutes we had the conversation. He's got some energy to him.
He really does. And one of the things I always liked when I was working with Brett and, you know, having more one-on-ones type conversations is you can be having like a really just fun conversation. You're laughing, whatever. And then you ask a certain question and how quick he can flip from having fun to this is work mode. And you can almost see his eyes brighten up a little bit more. Like you can see the pride he takes in his job. You can see how much he wants to get better so that he's better for the players and the team. Right. Like, you know, obviously I didn't know this, but the fact that he went to what's it called? Toastmasters.
Sure.
Toastmasters. Yeah. Right. Like, and the way that he describes, like, you know, as a player, you always work on your shot or work on this. Like, I need to be working on something on the coaching side. But I imagine there's not a lot of, especially ex-players that turn to coaches that would go do that, right? Like, you'd almost feel self-conscious about putting yourself in that situation. But Brett is someone that is extremely focused on being the best at what he does as he can. Just like when he played, it's the same as a coach. And you can see that and hear it when he's talking about, you know, whatever it's systems or what the team's trying to do. Like, he is dialed in and wants this to work and wants to be a big piece of the reason why this team works as well. It's fun to be around, and I guarantee that the guys in the dressing room feel that and appreciate it just as much as we did when he was first starting out.
Three more games on this homestand: Columbus, Colorado, Winnipeg. That's not an easy group of games to go through with three games in 4 days. And you know, going 2-1 in many ways, going 2-1 with this three game stand like they did on the last road trip, I think would be considered a moral victory.
Oh, I think it's more than just a moral victory. I think there would be it would be a very good thing all across the board. You know, Columbus, much like Chicago, last year Chicago was what they were, and everyone still has that team in their mind a bit. And mm-hmm. this team this year, Chicago, is light years ahead of that. Columbus had that magical run last year after obviously devastation just before training camp with Johnny Gaudreau, but the guys came together and it felt magical all year. And a big question was coming into this year, would they be able to take another step? And they've been floundering around a little bit, but at the same time, they have speed, they have size, they have guys that can make skill plays. You have, I mean, you have Zach Werenski on the back end, pretty good hockey player and a pretty good guy to be leading the charge from the backside. Like, you need to be ready to go. This league is so tight right now. You know, we've always talked about the parity in the league over the past, you know, call it decade, but this season is completely different. I think how quick the games are coming are making it harder for teams to string big winning streaks together. Like, you're just, there's some games you go into and teams just don't have the gas. So you need to be ready as much as you can. You got to know how to play mentally and physically when you don't, when you're not at your best. What does your game, like your B game, look like? And for the Canucks going into this stretch, they got to get through Columbus. Like, that's a really big game for them. That game against Chicago sat with them for sure, and they want to come back with a win. And then you're going against two very good teams in Colorado and Winnipeg that, you know, have some legit stars that are game breakers. But at the same time, those are games that they're easy to get up for. It's fun playing against some of the best in the league. You want to be the team that can beat them and prove to yourself and your fan base that, you know, the season's gone one way so far, but this is what we can be. And when we get healthy and we keep moving, this is where we can be at. And it's a big opportunity for them, for sure.
So that's Columbus, Colorado, and Winnipeg before the Canucks go back on the road to the American Southeast, where it doesn't get any easier. Carolina, Tampa, and Florida. Thanks for this, Landon.
Yep, have a good one. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Have a good weekend, everyone. We will talk to you next week on 100% Canucks.